Senator Harris.
Attorney General Sessions, you have several times this afternoon prefaced your responses by saying, to the best of your recollection. Just on the first page of your 3 pages of written testimony, you wrote, nor do I recall, do not have recollection, do not remember it. So my question is, for any of your testimony today, did you refresh your memory with any written documents, be they your calendar, written correspondence, emails, notes of any sort?
I attempted to refresh my recollection, but so much of this is in a wholesale campaign of extraordinary nature that you're moving so fast that you don't keep notes. You meet people. I didn't keep notes of my conversation with the Russian ambassador at the Republican convention.
Sir, I'd like to just talk about what you did.
You know, I'm just saying I didn't keep notes on most of these things, and there's nothing for me.
Will you provide this committee with the notes that you did maintain?
As appropriate, I will supply the committee with documents.
Can you please tell me what you mean when you say appropriate?
I would have to consult with lawyers in the department who know the proper procedure before disclosing documents that are held within the Department of Justice.
Attorney
General,
I'm
not
Sessions.
Able to make that opinion today.
Sir, I'm sure you prepared for this hearing today, and most of the questions that have been presented to you were predictable. So my question to you is, did you then review with the lawyers of your department, if you as the top lawyer are unaware, what the law is regarding what you can share with us and what you cannot share with us, what is privileged and what is not privileged?
We discussed the basic parameters of testimony. I frankly have not discussed documentary disclosure rules.
Will you make a commitment to this committee that you will share any written correspondence, be they your calendars, records, notes, emails, or anything that has been reduced at any point in time in writing to this committee, where legally you actually have an obligation to do so?
I'll commit to reviewing the rules of the department, and as and when that issue is raised, to respond appropriately.
Did you have any communications with Russian officials for any reason during the campaign that have not been disclosed in public or to this committee?
I don't recall it, but I have to tell you, I cannot testify to what was said as we were standing at the Republican convention before the podium where I spoke.
My question is only as it relates to your
I don't have a detailed memory of that.
Okay, as it relates to your knowledge, did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware
Although
of any communication?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody
sir,
came
sir,
up to me.
Sir, I have just a few.
Will you let me qualify it? If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
Are you aware of any communications with other Trump campaign officials and associates that they had with Russian officials or any Russian nationals?
I don't recall that.
And are you aware of
at this moment?
Are you aware of any communications with any Trump officials, or did you have any communications with any officials about Russia or Russian interests in the United States before January 20th?
No, I may have had some conversations, and I think I did, with the general strategic concept of the possibility of whether or not Russia and the United States could get on a more harmonious relationship and move off the hostility. The Soviet Union did, in fact, collapse. It's really a tragic strategic event that we're not able to get along better than we are today.
Before being sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
Would you repeat that?
Before you were sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
I did not submit memoranda. I did not make formal presentations.
Did you ever communicate with him in writing?
I don't believe so.
And you referred to a longstanding DOJ policy. Can you tell us what policy it is you're talking about?
Well, I think most cabinet people, as the witnesses you had before you earlier, those individuals declined to comment because we're all about conversations with the president.
Sir, I'm just asking you about the DOJ policy you referred to.
A policy that goes beyond just the attorney general.
Is that policy in writing somewhere?
I think so.
So did you not consult it before you came before this committee, knowing we would ask you questions about
it? Well,
that?
We talked about it. The policy is
based... Did you ask that it would be shown to you?
The policy is based on the principle that the president...
Sir, I'm not asking about the principle. I'm asking when
well,
you,
I'm unable
you would be
to
asked these
the
questions and you would rely on that policy.
Chairman,
did you not ask your staff to show you the policy that would be the basis for your refusing to answer the
Chairman,
majority
the
of questions that have been asked of you?
Should be allowed to answer the question.
Senators will allow the chair to control the hearing. Senator Harris, let him answer.
Please do. Thank you.
We talked about it, and we talked about the real principle that's at stake. It's one that I have some appreciation for, as having spent 15 years in the Department of Justice, 12 as United States Attorney, and that principle is that the Constitution provides the head of the executive branch certain privileges. And that members, one of them is confidentiality of communications. And it is improper for agents of any department of any departments in the executive branch to waive that privilege without a clear approval
Chairman,
of the president.
I have asked.
And that's the situation
Mr.
we're in.
For a yes or no, did you ask?
So your the
staff
answer is yes, I consulted.
Senator, did you ask your staff to see the policy?
Senator Stein expired.
Apparently
Senator
not.
Cornyn.
Attorney General Sessions, former Director Comey, his letter to FBI employees when he was terminated started this way. He said, I've long believed that a president can fire an FBI director for any reason or no reason at all. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and I think that was a good for him to say, because I believe we're going to have a new an excellent FBI director, a person who is smart, disciplined, with integrity and proven judgment, that would be good for the Bureau. And I think that statement probably was a valuable thing for Director Comey to say, and I appreciate that he did.
Just to reiterate the timeline of your recusal and the Rosenstein memo and your letter to the President recommending the termination of Director Comey. You recused from the Russian investigation on March the 2nd, correct?
The formal recusal took place on that day.
The letter that you wrote forwarding the Rosenstein memo to the president as a basis for Director Comey's termination was dated May the 9th, a couple of months after you'd recused from the Russian investigation, correct?
I believe that's correct.
So isn't it true that the Russian investigation did not factor into your recommendation to fire Director Comey?
That is correct.
The memorandum written by the Deputy Attorney General, your letter to the President forwarding that recommendation, didn't mention Russia at all. Is that your recollection?
That is correct.
So let's review what the basis was of Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's recommendation. He wrote in his memo on May the 9th, he said, I cannot defend the director's handling of the conclusion of the investigation of Secretary Clinton's emails, and I do not understand his refusal to accept the nearly universal judgment that he was mistaken. And, of course, he's talking about Director Comey. He went on to say the director... That was Director Comey at the time, was wrong to usurp the Attorney General's authority on July the 5th, 2016. You'll recall that was the date of the press conference he held. He went on to say that the FBI director is never empowered to supplant federal prosecutors and assume command of the Justice Department. Finally, he said, compounding the error, the director ignored another longstanding principle, that we do not hold press conferences to release derogatory information about the subject of a declined criminal investigation. In fact, there is written policy from the Department of Justice, is there not, entitled Election Year Sensitivities? Are you familiar with the prohibition of the Justice Department making announcements or taking other actions that might interfere with the normal elections?
I am generally familiar with that. Some of those were the Holder memoranda after my time in the department.
Well, let me read.
There's always been rules about it, though.
Well, let me read just an excerpt from a memo from the Attorney General, March 9th, 2012, entitled Election Year Sensitivities. It says, law enforcement officers and prosecutors may never select the timing of investigative steps or criminal charges for the purpose of affecting any election or for the purpose of giving an advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or political party. Such a purpose is inconsistent with the department's mission and with the principles of federal prosecution. Do you agree with that?
Essentially, yes.
So what essentially the Deputy Attorney General said is that former Director Comey violated Department of Justice directives when he held a press conference on July the 5th, 2016. He announced that Secretary Clinton was extremely careless with classified email and went on to release other derogatory information, including his conclusion that she was extremely careless, but yet went on to say that no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute her. That is not the role of the FBI director, is it? That is a job for the prosecutors at the Department of Justice. That's what was meant by Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein when he said that Director Comey usurped the role of the Department of Justice prosecutors. Is that right?
That is correct. And former Attorney General Bill Barr wrote an op-ed recently in which he said he had assumed that Attorney General Lynch had urged Mr. Comey to make this announcement so she wouldn't have to do it. But in fact, it appears he did it without her approval totally. And that is a pretty stunning thing. It is a stunning thing, and it violates fundamental powers. And then when he reaffirmed that the rightness he believed of his decision on May 3rd, I think it was, that was additional confirmation that the director's thinking was not clear.
Senator Reid.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. First, a point, Attorney General. Senator Heinrich and others have raised the issue of longstanding rules. If there are written rules to this effect, would you provide them to the committee, please?
I will.
Thank you very much. Now, Senator Cornyn has made the point that the whole substance of your recommendation to the President to dismiss Director Comey was his unprofessional conduct with respect to the Clinton administration. Is that correct?
I supported everything that Deputy Attorney General put in his memoranda as good and important factors to use in determining whether or not he had conducted himself in a way that justified continuing in office. I think it pretty well speaks for itself, and I believe most of it did deal with that. The discussion about his performance was a bipartisan discussion. It began during the election time. Democrats were very unhappy about the way he conducted himself. And in retrospect, in looking at it, I think it was more egregious than I may have even understood at the time.
General,
you're not with regard to the
General, if I may, okay. And I don't want to cut you off.
Okay, I'll let you go. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, sir, but on July 7th, when Mr. Comey made his first announcement about the case, you were on Fox News, and you said, first of all, Director Comey is a skilled former prosecutor, and then you concluded by saying essentially that it's not his problem, it's Hillary Clinton's problem. Then in November, on November 6th, after Mr. Comey again made news in late October by reopening, if you will, the investigation, you said again on Fox News, You know, FBI Director Comey did the right thing when he found new evidence. He had no choice but to report it to the American Congress, where he had under oath testified. The investigation was over. He had to correct that and say, this investigation is ongoing now. I'm sure it's significant, or else he wouldn't have announced that. So in July and November, Director Comey was doing exactly the right thing. You had no criticism of him. You felt that, in fact, he was a skilled professional prosecutor. You felt that his last statement in October was fully justified. So how can you go from those statements to agreeing with Mr. Rosenstein and then asking the president or recommending he be fired?
I think in retrospect, as all of us began to look at that clearly and talk about it as perspectives of the Department of Justice, once the director had first got involved and embroiled in a public discussion of this investigation, which would have been better never have been discussed publicly, and said he it was over, then when he found new evidence that came up, I think he probably was required to tell Congress that it wasn't over, that new evidence had been developed. It probably would have been better and would have been consistent with the rules of the Department of Justice to never have talked about the investigation to begin with. Once you get down that road, that's the kind of thing that you get into that went against classical prosecuting policies that I learned and was taught when I was a United States attorney, an assistant United States attorney.
If I may ask another question. Your whole premise in recommending to the president was the actions in October involving Secretary of State Clinton, the whole Clinton controversy. Did you feel misled when the president announced that his real reason for dismissing Mr. Comey was the Russian investigation?
I'm not able to characterize that fact. Wouldn't try to comment on that.
So you had no inkling that there was anything to do with Russia until the President of the United States basically declared it not only on TV, but in the Oval Office to the Russian foreign minister, saying, the pressure's off now, I got rid of that nut job. That came to you as a complete surprise.
Well, all I can say is, Senator Reid, that our recommendation was put in writing, and I believe it was correct. And I believe the president valued it, but how he made his decision was his process.
And you had no inkling that he was considering the Russian investigation?
Well, I'm not going to try to guess what I thought.
No, that's fair. There is a scenario in which this whole recapitulation of the Clinton was a story, basically, a cover story that the president sort of tried to put out and that he quickly abandoned, and his real reason was a Russian investigation, which, if had been the case, I would suspect you, in principle, would have recluded yourself from any involvement. So, thank you.
Senator McCain.
Over the last few weeks, the administration has characterized your previously undisclosed meetings with Russian Ambassador Kislyak as meetings you took in your official capacity as a U.S. Senator and a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. As chairman of that committee, let me ask you a few questions about that. At these meetings, did you raise concerns about Russian invasion of Ukraine or annexation of Crimea?
I did, Senator McCain, and I would like to follow up a little bit on that. That's one of the meetings that's one of the issues that I recall explicitly. The day before my meeting with the Russian ambassador, I'd met with the Ukrainian ambassador, and I heard his concerns about Russia. And so I raised those with Mr. Kislyak, and he gave, as you can imagine, not one inch. Everything they did, the Russians had done, according to him, was correct. And I remember pushing back on it, and it was a bit testy on that subject.
Knowing you on the committee, I can't imagine that. Did you raise concerns about Russia's support for President Bashar Assad and his campaign of indiscriminate violence against his own citizens, including his use of chemical weapons?
I don't recall whether that was discussed or not.
Did you raise concerns about Russia's interference in our electoral process or its interference in the electoral processes of our allies?
I don't recall that being discussed.
At those meetings, if you spoke with Ambassador Kisiak in your capacity as a member of the Armed Services Committee, you presumably talked with him about Russia-related security issues that you have demonstrated is important to you as a member of the committee?
Did I discuss security issues?
I don't recall you as being particularly vocal on such issues.
Repeat that, Senator McCain. I'm sorry.
The whole Russia-related security issues that you demonstrate is important to you as a member of the committee. Did you raise those with him?
You mean such words, issues as nuclear issues? Or?
Yeah. In other words, Russia-related security issues. In your capacity as the chairman of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee, what Russia-related security issues did you hold hearings on or otherwise demonstrate a keen interest in?
We may have discussed that. I just don't have a real recall of the meeting. I was not making a report about it to anyone. I just was basically willing to meet and see what he discussed.
And his response was?
I don't recall.
During the 2016 campaign season, do you have any contacts with any representative, including any American lobbyist or agent of any Russian company within or outside your capacity as a member of Congress or a member of the Armed Services Committee?
I don't believe so.
Politico recently reported that in the middle of the 2016 elections, the FBI found that Russian diplomats whose travel the State Department was supposed to track had gone missing. Some turned up wandering around the desert or driving around Kansas. Reportedly, intelligence sources conclude that after about a year of inattention, these movements indicate, one, that Moscow's espionage ground game has grown stronger and more brazen, and that quietly the Kremlin has been trying to map the United States telecommunications infrastructure. What do you know about this development, and how the Justice Department and other relevant U.S. government agencies responding to it?
We need to do more, Senator McCain. I am worried about it. We also see that from other nations with these kind of technological skills like China and some of the other nations that are penetrating our business interests, our national security interests. As a member of the Armed Services Committee, I did support and advocate, and I think you supported, legislation that would, and it's ongoing now, that requires the Defense Department to identify weaknesses in our system and how we can fix them. But I would say to you, Senator McCain, that as in my short tenure here in the Department of Justice, I've been more concerned about computer hacking and those issues than I was at the in the Senate. It's an important issue. You're correct.
The Washington Post reported yesterday Russia has developed a cyber weapon that can disrupt the United States power grids and telecommunications infrastructure. This weapon is similar to what Russia or Russian-allied hackers used to disrupt Ukraine's electrical grid in 2015. Can you discuss a little bit in open session how serious that is?
I don't believe I can discuss the technological issues, just to say that it is very disturbing that the Russians continue to push hostile actions in their foreign policy, and is not good for the United States or the world or Russia, in my opinion.
Do you believe we have a strategy in order to counter these ever-increasing threats to our national security and our way of life?
Not sufficiently. We do not have a sufficient strategy dealing with technological and IT penetrations of our system. I truly believe it's more important than I ever did before, and I appreciate your concern and leadership on that issue. And, in fact, all of Congress is going to have to do better.
Senator's time's expired. Chair would recognize the Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and General Sessions, thank you. I particularly appreciate your last comments with Senator McCain about the seriousness of this threat, and it's why so many of us on this committee are concerned when the whole question of Russian intervention, the President continues to refer to it as a witch hunt and fake news, and there doesn't seem to be a recognition of the seriousness of this threat. I share, I think most members do, the consensus that the Russians massively interfered. They want to continue to interfere, not to favor one party or another, but to favor their own interest. And it is of enormous concern that we have to hear from the administration how they're going to take that on. I also believe comments have been made here about where we head in terms of some of the Trump associates who may have had contacts with Russians. Candidly, we've not gotten to all of that yet because of the unprecedented firing of the FBI director that was leading this very same Russia investigation that superseded some of our activities. So those members who I hope will equally pursue the very troubling amount of smoke, at least, that's out there between individuals that were affiliated with the Trump campaign, possible ties with Russians. I've not reached any conclusion, but we've got to pursue that. Final comment, I understand your point, but you have to, there were a series of comments made by Mr. Comey last week. I think members on this side of the aisle have indicated you understand executive privilege, understand classified setting. I do think we need, as Senator Reid indicated and Senator Harris and others, if there are these long-standing written procedures about this ability to have some other category to protect the conversations with the President, we'd like to get a look at them, because we need to find out, in light of some of the contradictions between today and last week, where this all heads. At the end of the day, this is not only, let me restate what I said the last time, this is not about relitigating 2016. It is about finding out what happened, about some of the serious allegations about potential ties, but on a going-forward basis, making sure that the Russians, who are not finished in terms of their activities, didn't end in the election day in 2016. We know that is ongoing, and we have to be better prepared on a going-forward basis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, one brief comment, if you mind. I do want to say that a change at the top of the FBI should have no impact whatsoever on the investigation. Those teams have been working, and they'll continue to work, and they've not been altered in any way.
But there were a number of very strange comments that Mr. Comey testified last week that you could have, I believe, shed some light on. But we'll continue. Thank you, sir.
General Sessions, thank you again for your willingness to be here. Not sure that you knew it, but your replacement sat through most of this hearing, Luther Strange. He's made us regret that we don't have intramural basketball team in 6'9".
Big Luther is a good round ball player, Tulane.
You've been asked a wide range of questions, and I think you've answered things related to claims about the meeting at the Mayflower. You've answered questions that surround the reasons of your recusal and the fact that you had never been briefed since day one on the investigation, that you made clear that you can't think of any other conversations that you've had with Russian officials. You've covered in detail the conversation that you had, though brief, with Director Comey that he referenced to after his private meeting with the President, just to name a few things that I think you've helped us to clear up. There were several questions that you chose not to answer because of confidentiality with the President. I would only ask you now to go back and work with the White House to see if there are any areas of questions that they feel comfortable with you answering, and if they do, that you provide those answers in writing to the committee. I would also be remiss if I didn't remind you that those documents that you can provide for the committee, they would be helpful to us for the purposes of sorting timelines out. Anything that substantiates your testimony today, individuals who might have been at events that you're familiar with, especially those that worked for you, would be extremely helpful. And more importantly, I want to thank you for your agreement to have a continuing dialogue with us as we might need to ask some additional questions as we go a little further down the investigation. That certainly does not have to be a public hearing, but it may be an exchange and a dialogue that we have. You have helped us tremendously, and we're grateful to you and to Mary for the unbelievable sacrifice that you made in this institution, but also now in this administration. This hearing is now adjourned.
Thank you.